Welcome to Asia Calling, your window on Asia. Coming up on the show this week, marriages between Afghan refugees and Pakistani women have been taking place for decades, but increasing friction between the two countries is leaving families separated by a border. In Indonesia, an inspiring teacher is challenging the stigma surrounding cerebral palsy. We also hear from the din of India's deafening cities, some of the loudest in the world. From Thailand, we meet sex workers who are in control and showing that they can do it their way. Thanks for tuning into the show. I'm Nicole Kirby. The Afghan-Pakistan border has long seen a steady flow of movement, with visa-free travel permitted for both nationalities crossing into the other country. But in recent times, fears of terrorism have tightened border control. Visas and passports are now required for border crossings, and Afghans are being forced to leave Pakistan. The situation is tearing families apart. From Peshawar, Pakistan, Muldasa Shah has this report.
This house in Peshawar has just two small rooms and an open kitchen. The smell of the bathroom cuts through the air. It's home to a family of six. 31-year-old Aisha Rahmat lives here with her four daughters and 9-year-old son. But her husband of more than 20 years, Rahmat Khan, is nowhere to be seen. And Aisha says his absence has left her in a desperate situation.
I have stopped taking my medicine as I don't have money to buy it. My children have only eaten one meal a day for the last month. We have not paid utility bills. The owner of the house has asked us to vacate the house next month because we haven't been able to pay rent for the last few months.
Aisha's husband, Rahmat, has lived in Pakistan his entire life. He was born in the country after his parents fled Afghanistan during the Russian War of the 1970s. But 2 months ago, he was forcefully repatriated to Afghanistan. Even though Rahmat married a Pakistan woman and their children were born and raised in Pakistan, Aisha says the family has limited rights.
Our country's laws are so cruel towards women. I am a Pakistani citizen, but I can't get citizenship for my Afghan husband, who is the sole breadwinner for my family.
Their 14-year-old daughter Nazneen says she now has to stay home all day, unable to continue her studies.
I was asked to quit my studies in grade 9 because my father is Afghan. I was born in Pakistan, but that doesn't qualify me for a Pakistan identity card. My mother is a Pakistan national, but even so, I am not allowed to continue my studies in Pakistani schools. It was my dream to be a doctor, but that dream has been shattered because of crisis between the two countries and the strict policies.
Until 27 February this year, people from both countries could cross the Afghan-Pakistan border without passports or visas. And many took advantage of that freedom fleeing war in Afghanistan. There are around 1.3 million registered Afghan refugees living in Pakistan, and a further 1 million undocumented, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. Thousands of Afghan have married Pakistanis and continue to do so. Afghan truck driver Rafiullah has recently married a Pakistani woman, and they are waiting at a border, trying to cross into Afghanistan. But she doesn't have a passport, so they have been stranded for a week. A 2,500 kilometers long border divided Pakistan and Afghanistan. People on both sides of the border share language, religion, and culture. And the countries have long had cordial relations. but their situation quickly deteriorated after a terrorist attack in Pakistan in December 2014. Afghan militants were blamed for the attack, and Pakistan temporarily closed the border. Since then, there has been more and more terrorist attacks in Pakistan, prompting the government to abolish visa-free travel arrangements. Meanwhile, law enforcement agencies have started search and strike operations in areas where Afghan refugees live. Tracking down Afghans and forcibly deporting them. Late last year, dozens of Pakistani women who are married to Afghan men came out on the streets to demand their husbands be allowed to stay. But despite their opposition, many of the women are left with no way to take a living and no sign of when their families might be reunited. And back at Aisha's house, her husband is on the phone from Kabul, where he tells her he plans to take a second wife.
My husband has decided to marry in Afghanistan. I have noticed that his voice has been changed when he talks to me. He says he needs someone to look after him there, but I can't ask for the same thing. It's taboo. I'm getting punished for a sin that I didn't commit.
For Isha calling. This is Mudassar Shah reporting from Peshawar, Pakistan.
Teeming with people, cows and traffic, India's cities are some of the noisiest in the world. And all of that noise is proving dangerous, causing permanent hearing loss and health complications, from heart conditions to diabetes. Last Wednesday, No Horn Day was marked in cities across Indonesia, raising awareness of the impacts of noise. Jasvinda Sagal brings us this story from one very noisy street corner in Jaipur, India.
It's morning peak hour at Tonk Road, one of the busiest roads in the Indian city of Jaipur. Cars, scooters, motorcycles and tuk-tuks battle to overtake each other in the morning rush. The air is engulfed with the sounds of hundreds of horns relentlessly honking. Students hold signs that read, "For God's sake, stop honking. No Horn Day," and "Uncle, can you drive without honking?" When the traffic lights turn red, they make their way to waiting drivers and hand out stickers saying "No Horn." 14-year-old Manisha Gupta has good reason to dislike the sound of honking horns. She says they are often used to harass women.
Many young men blow their horn for no real reason. There are others who use them to tease and irritate girls.
At the corner, Dr. Surinder Kala, an ear specialist, is explaining the dangers of noise pollution.
Noise pollution and honking can cause not only permanent deafness, but also other major diseases like diabetes, hypertension, heart disease.
It's not uncommon for young Indian drivers to take the mufflers out of their cars and modify their horns, making their cars louder and, in their opinion, cooler. Many Indians feel honking is an essential part of driving, like 35-year-old Mahinder Singh, a lorry driver.
When I'm driving, I'm never sure if another vehicle will jump in my way from another direction. We don't have an effective lane system, so drivers are always coming into each other's lane. If you don't honk, there's a good chance you'll be hit by another vehicle. Honking is essential to prevent deaths on the roads.
According to the World Health Organization, WHO, a safe level of city noise is 45 decibels. But Indian cities are usually twice as loud as that, at an average of at least 90 decibels. Continuous exposure to noise at this level causes hearing loss and irreversible nervous system damage. 15-year-old student Kiran Sharma tells me she has personal reasons for joining No Horn Day. Last year, Kiran's sister lost her hearing due to noise damage.
My sister really liked loud music. Whenever she used headphones, they were turned up high. She always turned up the volume on our television until it was really loud. While driving, she would continuously honk. Now, doctors have given her a hearing machine to help her. Today, she is not able to hear properly. Her hearing has been terribly affected.
In an attempt to limit noise pollution, the noise regulation rules were introduced in 2000. The rules ban loudspeakers between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. and regulate noise levels in the city, including establishing zones of silence around schools, courts, and hospitals. But Pratik Kasliwal, an advocate with the No Honk campaign, says that these laws aren't enforced and so the problem persists.
There are fines ranging from 50,000. There's a penalty which ranges to 3 months imprisonment also. But unfortunately, people are not being fined according to the law.
Honking horns aren't the only problem. There's also the constant din of industry. Trains, planes and firecrackers filling the air. When I stop for a tea at a stall on the opposite corner of this busy intersection, the music is blaring at full volume. And sounds are also an integral part of religious culture in India. All places of worship are fitted with powerful loudspeakers. When famous Hindu singer Sonu Nigam recently took to Twitter to complain about the loud call to prayer from a nearby mosque at dawn, he provoked uproar. The reaction suggests that some of the sounds of India's cities are set to stay for a while yet. For Asia Calling, this is Jaswinder Sehgal in Jaipur, India.
You're listening to Asia Calling KBR. Where disabilities go unrecognized or unsupported, a small impairment can become a significant handicap. In Indonesia, there's little awareness of disability, and those living with conditions like cerebral palsy often face barriers to living independently and gaining acceptance from their communities and families. But one teacher has learned from her experience and is throwing kids with cerebral palsy a lifeline. KBR journalist Ika Juniari met Safrina Rovasita at SLB Yahipinas School for Children with Special Needs in Yogyakarta, Indonesia. A student is touching letters on a tablet screen as his teacher, Safrina Rovasita, urges him on. But this isn't your average classroom. The teacher and student in this classroom have something in common. Both have cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that affects movement and coordination. But Safrina hasn't let it hold her back. She met me in her break and told me why she wanted to become a teacher.
There are many challenges as a teacher, but I like children and I am learning a lot. Like, if there is a student who doesn't want to study, what can I do? How can I make them more interested in learning?
In all of Indonesia, there are just 3 teachers with cerebral palsy, and Safrina is one of them. Murhadi, the headmaster of SLB Yapina School for Children with Special Needs, says she's a valued member of staff.
S1,
After completing her degree, she was interested in teaching in a special school. She applied to SLB Yapenas. She had to pass a probation period of several months. During this time, she was interacting with the students. She is highly motivated, and she lives the spirit of the children that she teaches.
Although she's lived with the condition since birth, Safrina, now 32, didn't find out that she had cerebral palsy until she was in college. She says there was and still is very little awareness of cerebral palsy in Indonesia. Even doctors couldn't tell her much about it. So Safrina's parents ended up searching online to find out about their daughter's condition.
Not even my mother knew that I had cerebral palsy. She just thought that I was different. Nobody ever told us that it was cerebral palsy. Even now, doctors rarely tell children and their parents when they have cerebral palsy. So parents often go searching for answers on the internet.
In Indonesia, between 1 and 5 out of every 1,000 births are diagnosed with cerebral palsy. The condition is caused by abnormal brain development or brain injury during, before, or just after birth. Many people with cerebral palsy show signs of physical impairment as muscle control is affected. Limbs might tremble, shake, writhe, or be forced into awkward, painful positions. Simple movements like tying a shoelace or eating can become difficult. The gaping lack of information and support that she faced encouraged Safrina to initiate a group with several others.
I was looking for a cerebral palsy community, and when I was in college, I couldn't find one. Then, in 2012, along with other 7 other people, I established Wahana Keluarga Cerebral Palsy, a community for people with cerebral palsy.
In Yogyakarta, about 1,000 people live with cerebral palsy. The support group gives them the opportunity to share their experiences, knowledge, and consult with experts. And while they're doing their best to live a normal, independent life, there are still many challenges to overcome, says Safrina.
I want people with cerebral palsy, whether they have an education or not, to be able to live independently. But getting a job is still hard for people with cerebral palsy. Some of my friends have graduated from college, but they are still without jobs.
But Safrina won't be defeated. When she's not teaching, she writes for a local newspaper. And she dreams to one day publish a book about cerebral palsy and to return to university and start a PhD. For Asia Calling, this report was produced by KBR journalist Ika Juniari in Yogyakarta, Indonesia. In red light districts across Thailand, workers gather on the street looking for customers every evening. The government estimates there are 77,000 sex workers in the country, while NGOs say the figure is closer to 300,000. Both agree that sex trafficking is a significant problem. Even though the industry is widespread, sex work is illegal in Thailand. But, as Kanika Pechkau reports, one establishment owned and run by sex workers is challenging the norm.
It's Friday night here in this tiny bar in the red light district of Chiang Mai, in Thailand's north. The night is young, but the place is already crowded. Only one seat at the bar is free. A group of women are hanging out at the bar too, eating, gossiping, and jokingly teasing each other. They could be students, colleagues, or factory workers, but they are sex workers, and this is their bar. In 2006, a group of about 30 sex workers pulled their money together to set up this bar called Can Do. Together, they raised about $30,000 US and open this place. The idea being to create an establishment where sex workers are free from exploitation and abuse. It is the only bar in Thailand of its kind. That's Fa. She's 22 and the youngest sex worker here. She's leaning over the bar with a broad smile and long black hair, offering a customer a drink. In jeans and a t-shirt, she looks like a college student. But she has been a sex worker here at Candu for 3 years. Starting right after high school, Fa says she enjoys her job.
We work only at night, then we can go freely anywhere in the daytime. We can travel and we can also learn languages by our foreigner clients.
In her early 30s, sex worker Mai Chan Thai is the manager of Candu. She says the bar is unique because its workers are well paid and treated with respect.
We pay 300 baht per day and we have certain working hours. We close at midnight. We can take drink fees. And when the bar earns more than 2,500 baht each night, we get an additional 10% income. Any tips from customers go directly to each worker.
Unlike other bars in Red Light District, here there are no high heel boots or frilly skirts or no naked dancing. Women at Candu can do and wear whatever they want. Around 50 women are registered to work at the bar, but they can also work elsewhere if they choose. Usually they make between $30 and $50 a night, much higher than many other places. Fa and Pung are talking about a karaoke parlor they worked in several years ago before they found Candu. They say they were paid only $3 or $4 a night and sometimes had to work until 6 o'clock in the morning. Pung started sex work after she got divorced 6 years ago and is pretty frank about her profession. People that come to help sex workers always come with their own agenda, she says, usually starting from the premise that sex work is bad and sex workers are victims of poverty or trafficking. But that isn't always true, she says.
Journalists love a story about policemen cracking down to help those women. That's a great story and many people take great credit for it. But have you ever asked those women if they want to be helped?
Fa Pung and others have all worked in bars and brothels where the salaries were docked if they gained weight or didn't smile enough or if the patrons didn't buy them enough drinks. The best way to help sex workers, they say, is to decriminalize the trade so women are not subject to the whims of rapacious employers.
We just want to be under and protected by the labor law, recognized as the regular workers. What we need is only social security, salary, some days off, and equal rights.
And despite the social criticism they face for working in a taboo industry, Fa says you have to trust when the neighbors gossip.
I let them talk, but don't take it into account because doing so would just be to let myself down. No one can let you down if you don't allow them to.
For women, Fa and Pung, their work is just like any other service industry, and they should have fair practices and a safe working environment. For Asia Calling, this is Kanika Petkal from Chiang Mai, Thailand.
That's all for this edition of Asia Calling. Our program today was produced in the studios of Radio KBR in Jakarta, Indonesia. To find out more about the show, send us a message on our Asia Calling Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Asia Calling for more updates. You can now also podcast the show. Go to the iTunes store and search for Asia Calling and subscribe for free to the weekly episodes. I'm Nicole Kirby, back next week with more stories from Asia.
ਕਹਿ ਰਹੇ ਬੰਨੇ ਲੈ ਕੇ ਪਿਆਰ ਤੇਰਾ